Hello?
Conference record has joined the conference.
Good morning.
Morning, we're just getting the meeting started here.
Right, we're just waiting for a couple people.
Okay, it's Deborah Mabry from Morris Heights.
Hi, Deborah.
Okay.
Hi, good morning.
Look at the county commissioners, they're all clustered over there. But you need to be moving over there.
You don't want to create side. Yeah, dynamic.
So when you're close to it, it'll work?
I will move the laptop now to the back.
Okay. So we should tell them, we should say that. Okay. Let's, Steve, you ready?
Of course, I am.
Steve, are you ready? I don't like not sitting next to you. Thanks.
Hi, Jim. Good morning.
Hi, Steve. All right, why don't we begin, and I know this is a tough day. Most people had what was a second Sunday yesterday, and it's a little hard to get going then on Monday morning, or Tuesday morning, whichever it is. Hi, Joe.
Hi, sorry.
No problem. We just are starting. Welcome to the first full meeting of the State Local Responsibilities Work Group Phase 2. Our subcommittee, or the core of this committee, met throughout the summer and fall to provide recommendations to the Medicaid redesign team on things that could be done. And the governor and Jason have called us back and added a few new folks to look at what could be done immediately to move things from the county to the state in the next 2 years. So that's our charge, is to bring them a list of priorities. And today we'll go through what priorities have been suggested by you and by the state, and look at a set of criteria to evaluate them, and also to listen or to work with something called county liability and risk, which was brought up at the last phone meeting, to really focus on things that could be done to reduce risk to the county. So we want to spend some specific time on that. Steve, do you have anything to add?
No, let's get right into it.
All right. The agenda, will, as I said, will develop the list of functions. Judy will go through what she has. We have one more meeting of this group on March 15th, and so don't feel that we have to come to final decisions today, in particular because there's some analysis that has to be done on some of these things before we can really say this is something we want to put on the top or on the bottom of what of our list. So we'll do that. We'll look at the criteria for prioritization. We'll talk about risk, the agenda for the next meeting, and then we'll adjourn. I do want, before we start, to go around the room and have people introduce themselves, and then I think we have some members on the phone. So we need to do that as well. I'm one of the co-chairs, Ann Monroe, from the Community Health Foundation of Western and Central New York, Buffalo, Syracuse, Utica area.
Good morning. I'm Stephen Aquario, also the co-chair and with the State Association of Counties.
Why don't we keep going there?
Okay. I'm Joe Baker from the Medicare Rights Center.
Kate Breslin, Schuyler Center for Analysis and Advocacy.
Dave Jolly, DSS Commissioner from Orange.
Mike Fitzgerald, the DSS Commissioner from Madison County.
Cheryl Banker, DSS Commissioner from Erie County.
Brandon Turner, the FDA.
Moira Dolan, DC37.
Melinda Gutton, FNAF.
Denise Figueroa, Independent Living Center from Hudson Valley.
Good morning, Bob Franklin from Monroe County Social Services.
I'm Linda Hacker from HRA, representing Commissioner Dorr, who had a family emergency.
Bob Thompson from Excellus Blue Cross Blue Shield.
Martha Robertson, Legislature Chair, Thompson County.
Wendy Darwell with the Nassau Suffolk Hospital Council.
And Judy Arnold, the Health Department.
And please give Bob our best wishes.
All right. How are we doing on the computer?
Anne, do you want to on the phone?
Oh, I'm sorry. There are people on the phone. Not that I forgot you or anything, but how are you on the phone? Who's there?
Hi, it's Deborah Mabry from Morris Heights Health Center in the Bronx.
Anyone else? Okay, we're expecting Lauren Renaletta from Rochester on the phone, and otherwise, I think we're all here. As I said, many of us were together for a while this summer. We welcome the new members, and please, especially if you're a new member, if some of the things that we assume because of the work we did together and we gloss over them, if that's not something you understand or need more clarity on, please be sure to let us know. Our goal is to have you as up to speed as everyone else, okay? All right. While we're waiting for whatever is going to happen here with the computer, let me just open it up for a moment to some of you provided guidance to Judy and suggestions and prioritization. How was that list generally received in your constituency or your county? Any comments or thoughts? I know we'll get into the details, but let's fill the time a bit without me singing.
And I think some of the counties were working on lists already. And I think some of the ideas, generally speaking, have been thought about kind of over the last year, 2 years. Most of them are really right on point, and I think those are they all represent very good highlights and a very good way to get started. You know, with the one idea that there are some things the state is doing now, and I think we need to build off that. I mean, disability reviews, which the state does for some counties do it themselves, because there's expertise in the state already, we might want to start with some of that.
Okay. Any other thoughts? Okay. I'd like to, while we're waiting, let's shift to the criteria. People should have it in their packet. Oh, yeah, we can do the charge. Let's go through the charge. That's probably even better. We don't really need to have the slide for that. We talked about our charge on the phone. And we added a few pieces and clarified the pieces that were there before. Are there any comments on the charge, the revised charge that was presented, that's presented here that came from our last meeting?
Anne, I have a question.
Sure, Martha.
We can identify and prioritize functions. Is anybody going to be looking at a list and saying, okay, this can be done in 2012, and this can't be, and then tallying up how much a dollar figure associated with the workload that we expect to transfer in 2012? It matters to counties because we're, according to the governor's proposals, already going to have a cap on administrative expenses.
Right.
This year compared to last year, so assuming work transfer. So is there at any point, is that part of our strategy or?
Well, between now and the next meeting, there would be some analysis of these. I would imagine the dollar impact may differ from county to county, depending
depending upon the size and how they've organized their work. But let me ask Judy to respond to that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that would be a joint piece. I think what we would do is take the list is too long. It's a good list, but it's not a – it might be a 12-13 list. It's not a 12 list by itself. So I think our sense is to get a sense of the group of what your priorities are for us to put in doability. I mean, to some extent, we've started down the road to doability. And then with what budget has given us in the executive budget in terms of staff and resources, how much of those can we afford to do and achieve doing, with the computer programming and the other things in 2012? And that would be our contribution to that conversation. Your contribution would be, okay, if they do these four things, how much does that save me? And if it's not enough, letting us know that, or if it looks good, and I imagine the answer to that is going to vary by county.
Okay, so is that going to be in the charge, or is that going to be in the
I may just say, I think what we're talking about here is when we start talking about prioritizing functions, I really think that list kind of needs to focus on the 12-13 state fiscal year, the 13-14 fiscal year. Obviously, the 12-13 year is the important one for us because the cap comes into effect. So we need to prioritize in almost two ways. What can we get done this year? What happens in the year after that? I think that kind of speaks to Judy's point, and I think speaks to Martha's point, because really we are talking about having to move quickly on some function because of the cap. So we can prioritize in that way, that might get us closer to understanding where we're going to fall into our cap and what dollars we can move and what functions we can move and when.
Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, I just wanted to add that perhaps what Martha and Dave are talking about, there's a lot of talk amongst the counties and for the benefit of the full group here, including the city. There's a state fiscal savings of $62 million. So our charge with this group is to find $62 million of savings from the counties to the state, or that the state will assume that workload. So that's the pot of money that we're focused on that is happening here in this conversation. It's not an easy thing to do to come up with this, but the fiscal plan calls for $62 million. And so as we go through our next two meetings, we have to help recommend functions for the state to focus on initially to address, as Dave mentioned, the 12-13 and perhaps 13-14 state fiscal years. But for counties in the calendar year 12, and New York City included, well, it's a slightly different fiscal year for the city. Those are the state savings due to the cap. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And is the expectation that all those savings...
Can you speak into the mic? Yes.
Is the expectation that all those savings come from the county, or the joint county and state savings together, and is it just for the one fiscal year?
I believe it's county city, which and it's the one state fiscal year. But there's been no guidance in the budget. It just happened. Thus the importance of this work group. Very serious charge that we have.
So the idea, if I'm following that, is that if you add up all the counties, once we decide what their tasks are, the savings to the counties needs to be $62 million, regardless of what it costs the state to do that. Is that it, Judy?
But it's going to break, as you mentioned, Ann. Each county is going to be different.
Right.
It's going to break differently, but...
that's an important point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we don't know whether the assumption is that those are savings to the counties and the city together.
The city is included in that number. That's a statewide number. It includes the city. That's based on the discussion we've had with the Division of Budget. It's $62 million in the state financial plan. And they accrue savings by not letting Medicaid admin costs rise anymore. They did not clarify if they have to spend $40 million to make the $62 happen, how that works. But that's their intention. It's savings in the state financial plan. They get it two ways. Either they truly become more efficient and the cost of the service goes down, or they just don't reimburse the counties for the costs we're incurring. That's how they get their savings. It's going to be one of the two or a combination of both.
Well, that's a good day's work, isn't it? We have ahead of us.
Just back to the charge. So the analysis you talked about is included in this, or is there something else we should add to this to make sure we're analyzing the fiscal impact of counties?
I'm sorry, Martha, would you repeat that?
Do we need to add anything on the charge to make sure we're analyzing the fiscal impact of counties and the city? Or is that assumed in this?
We can add it, or we can assume that, I mean, it is implicit in our work, and you see it in two. We can't tell which ones those are going to be unless we do the analysis.
And then we can ask counties for their estimate. If we take over these things, what do you tell us quickly, you know, by March 15th, what do you think it will say, and we add it up.
Right. Okay, people okay with that? Yes.
It actually was just hopefully a clarifying question for me. Is this a cost shift from the county to the state, or is it an actual saving?
Good. Good question.
at least if we stay, as of today, it's a cost shift. I think the question for us is if the state can come through with absorbing some functions from the county, then there may actually be a savings on the county level and new costs on the state level. I don't know. I mean, that's something that Judy would need to explore.
But the intention of the governor's budget is to have it be help the counties. That's the goal. That's our charge. That's the goal. That's the governor's charge here. It was never to be a cost shift to the counties. So.
It's a function shift. And hopefully, and a cost shift. But if the state is doing it, perhaps the sheer size of doing it for everyone may end up costing the state less to do the function than it did in each county, too.
Correct.
So there may be some savings in that way as well.
That's right. Yeah.
But to be clear, it's really a wash to counties if it works correctly. In other words, if $62 million worth of work goes to the state away from the counties, mm-hmm. but we lose $62 million in reimbursements, then that's no different.
Correct.
There's no financial benefit to counties.
Right.
Correct.
Any other discussion before we move into the agenda? Did you have something?
No.
Yes.
I think what I hear him saying is that you need to save the county $62 million worth of work.
Right.
Yeah. And that can increase the cost to the state. We don't need to worry about that. We need to worry about saving the county $62 million worth of work. Is that right?
I believe that's correct, right, Steve?
Yeah. We have to help recommend to the state ways to assume what is now a local function. And for the state to do that, how can they do it more efficiently, more effectively, and without doing harm to the local governments who have been doing it for 50 years. So that's sort of the overarching charge.
Without
impacting negatively on the consumers.
Our charge says that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can I just ask for clarification? I seem to remember in the meetings over the summer, the county saying that their cost of providing these services exceeded what they received in administrative expenses. So theoretically, if we are taking $62 million worth of work away, that it was costing you more than $52 million to do the work, then there is some savings.
Well, those were largely non-Medicaid functions.
Okay.
In Medicaid, we're reimbursed
100%.
Okay.
Ann?
Yes.
Joe? I mean, I think, you know, I would say what Melinda said, you know, repeat that, but I won't. And not get too hung up on the $62 million, because frankly, if we're over $62 million, I mean, being optimistic, so much the better if we're doing the right thing by consolidating and centralizing functions and automating functions, et cetera. So, I mean, I'm certainly, I don't want to throw out the $62 million figure. I mean, that's a great goal, but I think if we focus on our real charge, you know, and we can get there and maybe beyond, you know, so much the better. And I don't know, Judy, if we're also including things like AVS. I mean, I know there's a cost for that in the budget. But I know it's sometimes hard to calculate what something like that might save in the future. But certainly AVS, asset verification system, would ultimately, you know, save money by and be better for consumers, particularly those 65 and older, you know, in some care program. So, I mean, it'd make it administratively more easy to administer the program. So, you know, I think there's a lot of loosey-goosey stuff in the sense that it's real, but getting, you know, getting DOV to score it might be difficult because until it's implemented, you know, we can't be 100% sure unless there are models in other states that have implemented AVS or things like that. So long way of saying is I think I understand the $62 million figure, but, you know, our charge is even kind of larger than that. You know, focusing on that, I think will help us either get there or beyond. And certainly, you know, we'll hear from DOB over the course of the budget session, and three parties will be negotiating that.
If I may, I think that's perfectly acceptable to me. I think for the work group that worked through the summer, that's what we were doing
right,
all summer
right.
long. The
sure.
issue is much bigger than the county fiscal note.
Right.
The issue is much bigger is what's the best way to run this program in New York State, and that's perfectly fine with me, Anne, and I don't know if you want to ask everybody, but that's what we did in the summer, and this is the next step of what we did in the summer.
Yep. I think, if I'm hearing correctly, it's like a floor of 60. We hope to achieve much better, more than that, but we don't want to get so obsessed with the number that we miss opportunities that might be less clear but could have bigger payoff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, I think everyone agrees with that, and we'll go forward in that spirit. What I'd like to do now then, so we'll go ahead with the charge, and we'll move then to Judy to talk about the ideas that came forward. She sent them out to you, and then there was response to them. So what did you hear, and what can you take over tomorrow, Judy?
I'm not going to go through the guiding principles. I really just included them for the new members. So they could see the guiding principles that were voted on by the work group to guide the work of and to kind of refer to them when we pick functions or do things, although we will have a criteria setting component at the end today. I'm not going to go through these. So let me just go to we sat down at staff and we brainstormed about 9 or 10 functions that we thought made sense for early implementation. And early we looked at is the 2 years. To some things in our world, you know, it takes systems changes a full 12 months sometimes. So some of the things will be really 2013, but we do want to try to look seriously at some 2012 opportunities. And we then we got feedback from many of you, either adding or prioritizing the list. And I'll go through that. And then what we did at Ann's urging is we grouped them as best we could into groups. So there are probably 20 ways we could have grouped them, but we took a stab at functions with opportunities for increased automation. And I'll go through, in these categories, I'll go through what they mean, the ones that fell under that. Functions requiring specialized expertise. So if you could get a specialized unit and everything could funnel through that, that could be something the state could do rather than have it diversified, you know, just decentralized all across the state, having to build that expertise, although some of you have it today. And then new applications. Were there some examples of new applications that could be taken by the state? Certain undercare situations. And for those of you, I got a long list of undercare recommendations from Schenectady County, and he couldn't be with us today, but for those of you who don't speak Medicaid eligibility. Undercare is defines changes that affect eligibility or issues arising during enrollment. So you have a change of address, you have a new job, and you come in and you get your eligibility looked at. So there's a whole host of things that happen
we do various, what, some of the ones on his list, and I'll get into these, were various data matching, where we then, we the states do data matching, and then we send lists out to counties to reconcile those lists, and the recommendation came back, stop doing that, keep them. Some of that came from the city also, in different ways, so I will... Linda, I apologize that some of your new ones aren't on the list because I didn't have it in time to put it in the, but that's because you didn't get it in time, so we'll remedy that in the future. And then other, because I had no other place to put them. So functions that,
how do you want to do this, Judy? Do you want to take questions as you go along? Do you want to each cat?
Yeah, I thought I'd just give the overview of the buckets, and then now we can, I'll talk about these, say what I heard from you about them, and then we'll talk before we go on to another category.
That's fine.
I think that makes sense, to make it more interactive. So functions with opportunities for increased automation. I mean, this one, the number one was a number one priority on many of your lists back to me. Those who prioritized, and the ones who prioritized tended to be local districts. They listed it, so that makes sense. And this one also was on our original recommendations, and we're moving ahead on this one. So this one fits a lot. It probably is going to get check marks on a lot of the criteria. It automates the use of provider bills to determine when spend-out has been reached. And I don't know if you want to pause on each of these.
Well, why don't you finish the group, and then we'll talk about them all.
Because I do have some questions on number one. But we got some comments on number one that you liked it, but some of the complexities with it. So I thought some of the complexities might make sense to talk about. But that's really where we would, right now people come to the local district with their bills every month to meet their spend down. And this is a process where if we could automate, have you made me speak to WMS and automate the bills, and by automating that we could identify whether someone has spend down, we could reduce the traffic into the local district with these shoebox bills every month. The other one is automate processing of Medicare savings program renewals and applications, including the MIPA applications, which are the applications for D. Those have to now be looked at for the Medicare savings program. That probably has five or six different projects in it, one of which that we've implemented this year is renewal of people with regular income. So if you have, I'm forgetting it's on the Social Security, thank you. If you have Social Security and you just live on COLAs, we can automatically renew you without having a renewal get sent out. So there's probably six or seven pieces of bullet two, and some we can do early and some we can do later. Expand the number, and then finally expand the number of counties for which the enrollment center processes renewals. But the full caveat that before we expand, we do everything well we're doing now. That was the number one comment I got from those of you next to that bullet. We agree we wouldn't expand until we're able to more seamlessly renew people in the 12 counties that we're working in now. And we've got some system changes in February that we hope will move us closer to that day where we're able to expand. So with that, I'll stop and get your thoughts on these.
Judy, can you tell us on the last one, taking some questions recently on the enrollment center, what is the status? Perhaps you could update the work group on the enrollment center. When did it start? What's its purpose? And how's it going right now?
Sure. The enrollment center began the consolidated call center in June. It's a consolidated call center for that's just information and referral information for Medicaid, CHIP, and Family Health Plus. That's taking sort of like the hotline function that the state had in three different places. So there is some opportunity. Some of the counties actually said, what if more of the sort of consumer calls went to a centralized call center? There's some opportunity. That call center is working very well. It's answering the phone. It handles calls. It doesn't have drop calls. It answers their questions. The other piece of the enrollment center was mail-in and telephone renewal, and that we started in June. We expanded too quickly. I think that's really, we expanded to too many counties, got overwhelmed. I mean, the big issue there is we didn't have enough automation, and we didn't have enough, we need state staff to sign off on the renewals, and we didn't have enough state staff. So when the enrollment center finished with the renewal, we in the state got bogged down. And that's really where the delays have occurred, is, and so we scaled back to 12 counties. We're improving automation, and we will be, after the budget passes, we hope we'll be improving the staffing situation. And again, we need to be able to sign off on them as fast as the enrollment center gives them to us. So we have in 12 counties, and they're doing phone renewal in 7 counties. We hear very good things about the phone renewal. What we hear from the counties is, those who are in it, is that it has reduced their workload, and it's made them be able to put some people to other functions. But the referrals back from the enrollment center to them is too many. And there are certain instances where we don't have the automation, so it goes back to the county. Some examples of those are when the renewal has come in when the case is already in clock down. So it comes into the enrollment center, but it's late, so it's already in clock down. The enrollment center has no ability, our automation, it's not them, has no ability to reactivate the case. So those go to the district, and the timing is tight because they're coming in late, so that is an irritant, and we get that. And I'm trying to think if I had them better with the legislature last week. Disability review. Someone's renewing, they weren't disabled, and now they're saying they have a disability. We don't. They can't do disability reviews at the enrollment center, so those go back to the district. So while we've taken a bunch of workload from renewals, there's a bunch of cases that still go back, and we're working on improving automation. So I would say that the story in the enrollment center is we didn't start with automation, and we didn't start with adequate state staff, both of which we're remedying. And again, until it's completely remedied for the 12 counties we're in, we wouldn't entertain expanding counties.
It raises a question for me, just a general one, and that is, are we to assume that the state will have the capacity to take over these functions at kind of full speed, or, is that part of us? Of our thinking, because I'm sure when you took over, when you started the enrollment center, the idea was that it would reduce work for the counties, et cetera, et cetera. And any new thing like that has all kinds of bugs to fix. But the urgency of the savings here is such that what steps will the state be taking to come up to speed on whatever the decisions are made about processes that move over? Can't just evolve kind of at their own pace.
Excellent question.
It doesn't seem to me.
And I think that it's up to us and our recommendations to the state to make that acknowledgement. Are they prepared with capacity? And as we just saw with the enrollment center update, capacity is an issue. So as we're recommending things from our group, I think it's a good suggestion, Ann, to keep an eye on capacity.
I mean, I'll answer that in two ways. One is I think we've been humbled by the enrollment center experience. That's a good thing. I think that we don't want to go out of the gate. We're not going to sit here and say we can do this in 2012 if we can't. The other piece that was missing is we have a real commitment from DOB of resources and staff to make these activities happen in 2012. And that's a real difference. I mean, there's staff in the budget, which we didn't have. We were launching the enrollment center by begging and borrowing from around our own division. We didn't have enough people. So there's a real commitment there, and I think that they recognize that we can't meet these tasks without that commitment.
We'll take you. I forgot. Your name is Bob, and then Joe.
I'll just be very brief. As part of that recommendation, I do encourage the Department of Health to maintain adequate communication with the state's OTDA as they improve their technology and continue their evolution away from the use of WMS. As you're catching up in technology, don't compare OTDAs leading on.
My comment is, and I don't want to make it more complicated than it needs to be, especially for you, Judy, and your folks, but is there a way to kind of calendar some of this stuff? So for example, when you say, automate MSPs, and you talked about the enrollment center, and you say there are, 5 or 6 different projects there, I think we understand that it's not as easy as, this can all get done at once, as it were, that there are levels within each one of these bullets, and particularly we haven't even talked about the first bullet, the provider bill piece, but, it might be useful for folks to have a sense of confidence, and also I'm sure you're doing this anyway for your work plan and workflow, to know, okay, well, what is in 2012, and what are the pieces of that, and why does one piece not fall into 2012, because it's, more complicated, or there needs to be even additional staff, in, next year's budget or wherever, to get it done. So, that might give us a degree of what the lock steps are, and also, kind of drill down a little bit into, what's actually happening when.
Wendy?
I think the other piece of capacity is that there's the workforce piece and then there's the technology piece. And I know that the department has been doing a lot of work, not just on the assumption of county responsibilities, but for exchange implementation. Since, as we talked about all summer, they've got to go hand in hand. And I know that there has been a lot going on there, and maybe if there's a point in the agenda that you could talk about that, it might give us a little bit better sense of what is realistic in the transition.
Let me just comment, though, on that. I mean, I'm not going to do it here, but if people want it, we can do it either next time or later, depending on time. Are moving ahead with a vision for a new eligibility system, a procurement for a new eligibility system. We don't anticipate having that built before 2014. So the things on this list are purposefully things that we can do within the existing system, or you can create a system to interface more easily, or easily, relatively. But, that's what we did with the Enrollment Center. We created a handle renewals that then would speak to WMS. And the other issue I didn't talk about is that it isn't so easy.
Yeah.
It works by itself, and then it goes to speak, and it kicks out all these errors that no one anticipated, and that's required all these manual work that we didn't anticipate. So that's been another big issue that I usually lead with. So I'm sorry I neglected to do that. But it's important to know. So we have talked about, MSP would be an interface with WMS. Again, that made sense because we're not going to have a new system, and the MSP populations are going to be in the new system on day one. So it might make sense to invest in something to streamline them while we're still living in the WMS world.
Martha?
Thanks for that question, Wendy, because as of our last meeting, not 2 weeks ago, last week, but last summer, I thought we were kind of nowhere with software, and it looked like it was going to be, some years. So it sounds good that it's being worked on, but I'm a little nervous that if counties are going to have to develop, adjust to the new technology now in the next year or two for these fixes that are built on WMS, will we be required to also make adjustments when you've got the new eligibility system, and will we have to pay for that? We've had many instances where we are told, okay, here's a new system, and we just have to buy up for whatever, the hardware and software. That's a lot of money.
I don't know enough to answer your question right now in full. These pieces we're talking about for the next 2 years, we're talking about the state doing and the state operating the interface. So the answer is no, we're not expecting you to buy things or interface with it. I can't say that, with the Enrollment Center, there wouldn't be some subset that have to come back to you, because that was our world there and we didn't anticipate it. So I don't want to say it's zero, but that would be our goal, is we would build an interface, we'd manage, and we would take those functions away. In terms of the new eligibility system, that I think is a whole different conversation. I think we need to wait on that. I mean, we do anticipate the counties using that because by 2014, everything is going to have been built. So we're going to have a partnership with us even when the exchange gets built. I think that's the reality. And there, I think we're just not ready until we have a vendor and we can answer these questions. We're just not there yet.
Carol?
Yes, just one comment. Every county will experience the admin gap with everybody else, but in terms of relief, we're actually going to be at the end of the
schedule, at least we have been. And on one hand, I appreciate my colleagues on the eastern side of the state sort of working out the kinks and all of the changes. Erie is right now slated to be one of the last counties that receives any kind of relief. So all I would ask is that you think about the rollout strategy that, you know, maybe we're going to have to take our turn being first in the queue instead of always last, because right now Erie has no relief and none in sight.
Can you be a little more specific about what specific relief you're talking about?
The enrollment center, for example.
Oh, okay. All right.
You know, the eastern counties have that relief. So when the Medicaid admin cap goes into place, they've gotten some relief. We're not even scheduled yet, so we won't see that relief, at least right now. That doesn't appear that's the case.
And I think that's a good point, and you're in the New York City's often in that position where we say not yet with you because of their volume. And they're going to need relief, too. And so I think that voice of what will give you relief when we look at these lists, I mean, I know what Linda's number one is. And if that's your number one, that would actually be helpful. You know, that would, because then we could look at some of the counties who may, I mean, it may be that we piece together this, everyone likes, but this we're only doing in these counties, so let's give those counties this piece. I mean, legitimate.
Dave Jolly.
I think, Judy, you're right. The enrollment center does have the ability to provide some real relief. So maybe what we could ask for without killing this too much is a new schedule, a new rollout schedule, because it would appear that you are trying to move it up in light of the new state budget. Maybe if we had a new schedule, I mean, Orange County was in stage two. We never got to stage two. Maybe what we need is some details on the rest of the staging. There was at one point in time a statewide rollout schedule. Maybe by the next meeting we can actually take a look at what the new enrollment center rollout will be. We do know that there were bumps in the road with the enrollment center, and that improvements are being made. Maybe what we can do too is collect some feedback from some of the counties that are currently in the enrollment center to see where we stand. I know there's been improvements, as we've heard, kind of across the board there has been, but I don't think there's a county in the room that's part of the enrollment center now. Is that correct?
Monroe.
Okay, so maybe there's some detail there we could about, you know, what the workload relief is, and maybe we could get some details out of Monroe as to, you know, how many staff were saved and where they were reallocated to, and with the new rollout schedule that would allow us then to also get functions and time of functions. I think the enrollment center, though, is probably more of a next year issue. I mean, really, for relief to all counties, it's really probably more than a year away.
All counties minus New York City, probably.
Okay.
I mean, I don't even think we're talking New York City in 2013. But I think we will add more. I'm confident we will add more counties in 2012.
All right.
Bob, do you just have a comment from Monroe on the enrollment center? Has it saved you?
I think we're. excuse me. Monroe County is pretty happy with the enrollment center. We talk about technology. There are existing technologies I think the enrollment center could take advantage of right now. Scanning, for example, is a way of communicating with all districts that they're working with. Imaging, scanning. They would be a huge benefit. We still deal with faxes.
Okay. So we'll look at that for the next meeting or some information before. Linda, and then Martha.
I think the work on our renewals with the enrollment center might help identify a criteria for other functions, which is trying to pick functions that are relatively clear and accessible. You know, the Medicaid program is so complex and everything relates to everything else. And I think that's one challenge that's been happening with the renewals is who owns the renewal and what if a consumer walks into a local district when the enrollment center is working on the renewal. So as we pick other functions to go, I think to the extent they can be a little more standalone, there's nothing completely standalone, but that's one criteria to look at as we consider them.
Martha.
There's a comment from my district that said that, and I sent these to everybody, we're also skeptical about the amount of time this will save as counties are, you know, added, because there's much communication required between the district and the center, as well as cases bounce back to the local district when they have complications. So it's not just adding more counties, but making sure if you're taking the word, you keep the word.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Anything else on the enrollment center? Okay.
Well, Schenectady is also in the enrollment center, and he will be on the meeting.
Great. Okay. Well, between now and then, perhaps we can just get a little, gather a little information or share it. We did that at one of our meetings last year, last summer, just kind of share where the enrollment center was. So, mm-hmm. And I don't want to lose Joe's point about calendaring. Mm-hmm. And I think for the next meeting, we want to have built a calendar of so that you can begin to estimate what savings are when, because they're all not going to come day one either. You know, the savings will come over time. So you wanted to spend some time on the first one, Judy.
Yes. And I might, if we get into too many details. A lot of people like this one. They said that's real workload relief from Thompson County to Madison County and a few others. Other concerns that came up by one of the counties was when people use unpaid bills. And I don't know how we would deal with that.
That's true, not true. Both we both be deadening.
So it's unpaid and paid would be an amendment?
If it's an older...
Can you use the mic so that we can be recording it?
Hi, everybody. I talked to a couple other states that have implemented this, and forget the older bills when the person first comes in. Those still take a worker to figure out how many months the person has met their spend down. But once they get going, they have all of their Medicaid providers submit claims, whether they're going to get paid by Medicaid or not, and that's how the eMedMe system kind of tracks it, kind of like a deductible with your insurance. But once the individual goes to the provider and the provider submits the claim, it's treated, logged like a paid bill. So if all, you know, different providers throughout the month, once it adds up to the person's spend down amount, then Medicaid will start paying any additional claims that month. But if the person does not incur bills to equal their spend down, you move on to the next month. And those bills stay paid in the month that the person went to the pharmacist or went to the doctor. So it's not so much the person bringing in bills, unpaid bills, adding them up themselves, and then submitting them to the agency to get a month's worth of coverage or 2 months' worth of coverage. The way this works, it's done based on the provider billing, and it's treated like a paid bill each month. If it's a big paid bill, I mean, Medicaid would look to pay the difference. So anything above the spend down.
So the provider will bill Medicaid for everything. And so, and Medicaid will spit back how much, many systems going to spit back how much of those bills need to be paid by the consumer and where those cutoffs are going to be.
Right. MedMe apparently keeps an internal log and keeps track of that.
Okay.
At the end of the month in two states, MedMe also sends a letter to the recipient indicating which bills came in that were used to offset the spend down. And therefore, these are, you know, bills that the individual has to pay the provider. And the provider gets that message when they submit their claim.
Okay.
Okay, we'll start down here.
How does the system decide which bills get paid and which system? And is it just kind of luck of the draw when they come in?
It's based on the data service, and it's first one in. And surprisingly, other states have not reported problems with that. Like, they have not experienced providers waiting, you know, so that they can be second or third. They've actually had the support of their provider community as they move to eMedMe. They've also, some states that initially did not start using individuals who have reoccurring bills, like our personal care, home care population right now, they have that reoccurring bill and they've worked it out where they designate that bill as one bill each month to meet their spend down. Initially left that population out of their automated process, and they've just recently added them in because they ran into problems as those individuals switched providers, switched agencies, that then the people had a little bit of a transition time. So they've just, in addition, put that population into this, you know, automation.
Okay. Linda?
We were concerned with the provider billing. Like, just in general, isn't there a fair lag in providers submitting bills to Medicaid so that people's coverage wouldn't go up right away?
Other states have not reported that.
We have a big volume just the first few days of the month. We have consumers trooping in our doors to get the coverage up for that month.
Right.
Yes, Bob.
So what happens when you put a plan in the middle of this? Does that occur?
I have not talked to any states with a plan, no. Managed care, you mean?
Yeah. So yeah. Are these members of plans or are they?
They're not members of plans.
Will they become members of plans as we unroll mandatory enrollment?
I don't think managed care has discussed yet how they're going to deal with spend down.
I would just point you in that.
Yeah. No, I know.
Yeah, New York would be fewer and fewer outside of managed care. So before we leave this, were there others for automation that didn't make sense, Judy? Are there other things that you thought about that weren't included, or are these three that we should keep on our list as possibilities for 2012 and 13?
Try to use every idea that came through. Some of the not all the undercare made it. When we get to the undercare one, I grouped, and if I missed anything by grouping, you can tell me. And there may be a new app one that I didn't include, but I remember that. It's either there or it isn't. If it isn't, I'll tell you about it. But this one, there were no other suggestions, and I think we can keep these all on for 12 and 13. I don't think we can get all the way to bullet two, but we can certainly take pieces. And that's where Joe's calendaring idea comes in. We can spell that out a little bit more detail on what that would take.
I'm looking at the one that my Medicaid administrator added, and it wasn't on the list. I don't know if it sits here, but MASSI cash cases.
I have that later.
You have it later. Okay. Yeah.
Three people asked for that, and I'm going to ask you to define what you're thinking about to make sure you're all saying the same thing, because everyone wrote it exactly that way. No other word. Okay.
That's how we met.
That's right.
Okay. All right, so let's move on to the next one then, Judy. Did I get everybody's question? I don't want to miss anybody. Okay.
Okay, this one we grouped as functions requiring specialized expertise and that. This one is centralized third-party health insurance evaluation and reimbursement. And within this, we had assumed the Family Health Plus Premium Assistance Program, and we need to think about whether that will still be in existence in 2014. But I guess for 12 and 13, we don't have to worry about that. But everyone wrote that. They all added it. And we meant this to be sort of inclusive of the third-party health insurance. And I guess what I'd like to know from you when I open it up is, do you see it as all-inclusive, or would you want to keep third-party aside from Family Health Plus, and that's what you'd really like? So that would be a useful thing to understand. And by this, we mean it's pretty labor-intensive to evaluate and get the information about someone's third party, and then when you enroll them in third party, the Medicaid rules are if you have health insurance, you get and you're eligible for Medicaid, you get evaluated for whether it's cost effective to pay the premium of the health insurance. And if you find it cost effective, then you have to reimburse people for their out of pocket costs with the health insurance. So there's undercare pieces all year long of reimbursing people for copayments. And then there's managing the premiums every month. And some districts really like it, and they have a whole little unit devoted to it. And other districts really, really have a hard time with this and would like to shed it instantaneously. So this one got a lot of yes, please. The second piece is expand counties for which the state conducts disability determinations. This also got a mixed reaction. And this was only put there from the thought of the state currently has a disability review unit that does disability determinations for 41 counties. It doesn't take away the need at the local level to collect the medical documentation. So we should talk about how much relief this really provides, but we do, when we get the package, we do the determination and put them up as disabled. And the question is just, are there counties that would be interested in adding that? I don't know if it's, you know, we would have to see whether we could get enough staff to do the whole state. That's certainly always been on our list, is maybe this is something that should be centralized. I got, from the counties, I got a yes, please, we'd like that, to a no, we do it well, this is, it wouldn't be workload relief for us, which is fair. I mean, both statements are fair. And then the third one, there's a requirement in the budget that all counties have an enrollment broker, that Maximus Enrollment Broker for Medicaid Managed Care, and many counties use that today, and this would be the remaining counties that don't. And the question that came back from those counties was, well, if you're capping us with admin and we weren't using them before, we have no money to fund them. So this is just a money proposal, really. I don't know the only reason I put it under specialized expertise is that it's the enrollment broker brings the specialized expertise. But it would be the state would fund those counties where it's not in the cap. And I'm getting an amount that is, and I'll have that soon. But that seemed like one to put on the table because that's a legitimate concern from some of the counties that are now being asked to do this. So with that, I'll open it up.
Any thoughts about things that might have been on there but aren't? I had one that I wanted to mention. It's just where we had a lot of discussion last summer about the work that's required and the specialized work required for, let me get this right, for determining whether someone is eligible for Medicaid for long-term care. Looking back, the look back, all the work that has to be done for that, looking at various trusts, the legal expertise that's needed. Now, that didn't make the list, and so I want to ask you about that because it seemed to generate a lot of energy when we talked, but I don't know if that's one that's not on the list because you couldn't take it on or nobody suggested it or what happened to it.
Two pieces of that are moving forward and maybe they should make the list. The two, and one piece we could put on the list and then have us go back and talk among ourselves, or you could decide whether this makes sense. But the one piece is the ABS. So ABS is, it's in the budget, the money to go out with a procurement to get a vendor that can electronically get us access to bank records through the look-back period. So we think that probably goes on automation, actually. We'll add that to automation. But if the budget passes with that funding in it, we will go forward with that. So that's that one piece. And the second piece is what's also in the budget is the proposal for application assisters in the community for long-term care and disabled applications. And then the third piece we talked about, which I didn't include, and I'll tell you why, although we could, is this idea of having a centralized legal unit at the state to review pool trusts. And the question we have is, for to do that, would the counties stop reviewing trust? Because one of the concerns we have is we'll just have it in both places.
Yeah.
We'll review the pool trust, you'll review the pool trust, and we will have increased the workload and not given relief to anyone, which is why I didn't put it on the list, but I'd certainly be willing to add a bullet and we can continue to talk about it.
I think it is worthy to put on the list. State's been making some efforts to do demonstration programs with counties on this, like Onondaga County through the OMIG. So I think there's something, at least a mention of it, that we can put in there. It's a very complicated program to get a handle on.
I want to dispense Robert Dorr's issue of risk. If counties still may be held accountable if there's a problem, if there's a legal issue, then we're going to have to... if it's the state's responsibility and counties are held harmless, if there's any, you know, fraud or whatever, then I'm going to guess we'd be happy to hand it over.
Other thoughts on that from any of the? Yes, Bob.
This is still a review at initial eligibility. We're still subject to the 45-day eligibility period. That communication between counties and state would have to all occur within that.
Yes.
Certainly on the asset verification, over the summertime, we had a long time discussing why those applications are so delayed, and there are a lot of them are delayed, and the asset verification system will speed that process, because a lot of the delay is just in waiting for access to 5 years worth of bank records or 5 years worth of annuity. So I think that will also help us in regards to speed of which applications can get through the system, which I think is a consumer focus for us and should remain a consumer focus.
Do you want your second point?
ABS is one, centralized legal unit was the other.
And the other was the application assisters for long-term care and disabled applications, which is in the budget.
On the centralized legal unit, I think the one thing we want to spend some time on is, at least I know in Orange County, we have a group of attorneys who work on this. Probably would never get to a full-time attorney that does it because they're relatively rare. So you may want to look at that in larger counties where there's a larger volume where that might actually equal a full attorney in a county who can, result in some savings. I'm just not sure that some of the smaller counties would experience the savings because I don't think the attorneys would go really anywhere. I don't know.
And I think for us it's really just, getting that to the consumer that it's handled differently in each county, how these pool trusts are handled. At what level are they? Are they sent to the attorneys at what level are they not? And so if there was a state pool of legal staff, there'd be a clear guideline over this goes to the state.
All right, let's go back then to the other ones on the list. Before we do that, the assisters with long-term care and disability that are in the budget, when they are fully running and effective, will they be reducing any county workload? I mean, I don't know enough about them
to
know.
Facilitated enrollment.
Right.
As family health plus child
right.
health Medicaid now, expanding that to do something.
Right. I mean, I think there's the possibility that they would. Once again, you could see it as an add-on, you can also see it as assisting counties in addition to the state in, funneling these folks through the application process and pulling together information for them to make it easier. I don't know, it's soft, like AVS, and that I don't know that DOB would, right now both of these programs are costs in the budget, not savings in the budget,
Kate, and then there.
Let's, I know that there's money in the budget for the facilitated enrollment. What's your thinking around rollout? Because the amount that's in the budget wouldn't be enough for penetration across the state. So is there a thought about kind of a plan for rollout around ultimately getting full penetration throughout the state?
I can't answer full penetration, but I can tell you the full annual cost is budgeted at $6 million. The amount in the budget is state costs only, and it's half a year of costs. Because it assumes we have to do a procurement, and it'll take us half a year before we start spending the money.
Would those applications that are handled by facilitated enrollers still go to the counties, or would they go directly to the state? That may be
where I was thinking.
Yeah.
Facilitated enrollers are only as good as they are trained. Because oftentimes they come into the local office and the workers have to start all over again because they didn't do a complete job or they didn't know what they were doing. So it's only as good as we train them what to look for and how to do this process. Because right now they're coming back in and just creating more work for the social service workers who have to go over it and fill it in.
Who's
the facilitated enrollment.
It's the quality of the enrollment.
Right.
What it falls
right.
down to.
There has to be a training component, or it's not going to.
They are trained. Yes. But an accountability component, too, it sounds
They are trained, and their performance is reviewed, and some counties send 90% of the people to them. It's across the state, but some counties are very dependent on facilitated enrollers because they don't have the workforce.
Yeah, I just want to challenge that statement that I think that's an overgeneralization. I think there is a lot of data, and we've had FD for a very long time, and the data that we have is that it's doing a pretty good job, and that the quality of the applications that are coming in and the quality of the training that's happening are actually quite effective at this point. That's not to say that you're long-term care would go through at the, we could assume that it's maybe similar to this, or were there assumptions put to that in terms of what the volume would be, so we don't know, we would totally be guessing on that one. And then if they come through the SE, then it goes through the county again. Is there any contemplation that the central unit that we're talking about is only about kind of a legal resource? So all of those applications would go through the county. The county would check it in the same way that they do now. And then the idea would be that instead of, to the extent that there are special circumstances related to resources that raise legal questions, whether that subset of applications would be further referred to the state, or do we think that it would be most applications that would be the state in?
Lindsay trusts a great deal. It would not be most.
Like less than 25%.
I mean, we definitely have an increased number of exception trusts and pooled trusts in our community long-term care population. Many of them are routine, so I think it's going to depend on when if trust gets forwarded to, you know, a centralized pool location, you know, which trust, and it's definitely, I don't have a percentage in mind, but I would imagine it's less than 10%. Maybe even less than 5%. Think about all your applications, even all your long-term care. I mean, not the majority.
Martha?
I'm thinking back to last summer and the straw man and the little boxes where we said the counties could do this or the counties would or would not. Or is this one of the things where the county could apply to be that facilitated
the
basically to do
some
work.
The work that's in the box. We haven't made the decision about the design of the program, but the envision I thought of the group was more communications. And I also don't think there's a current FE. I think they work with a different population. I think it's the population of people who work with the long-term care population, the disabled population. But with the FEs, we allow counties to sit on that program. We just haven't thought about how we would do that. We have to see that it gets through the budget, and we actually have it through.
I guess I would suggest that may be an option.
Option that the county could provide that service in their county, or bid for it, or whatever the term is. As a contract, almost.
Exactly.
Yeah. Linda?
I'm just going to say that, you know, New York City's experience with facilitated enrollers is that we get a good quality app overall from them. I would say, though, I wouldn't say with the cost savings, at least with the current program, it greatly increased the volume of applications, so it really reduced the number of uninsured, which, of course, is very positive, but also increased the work volume at the district. Now, this is a different population. It may be different, but they already have insurance and just need help. Obviously, it's a more complicated application, but I personally wouldn't view it as a cost savings. I think it's a public good, and we certainly support it, but not a cost savings for the district.
When you say increase the work for the district, is that in terms of the enrollment, or
the volume? From the current facility enrollment program, particularly the health plans, we get an enormous volume of applications.
Okay. So the cost is really, you're talking about associated with more people getting
processing, exactly. And from the
processing
district perspective, process, both
right.
Providing the insurance. Paying for insurance, but processing the application.
So the key question here would be, do we anticipate the volume would grow for this population? Do we think this population is getting it because
exactly. It's a very different population.
They need it so badly, they're getting it one way or another, this alternative route.
Bob?
I would have to agree with New York City, Linda. Thank you. In terms of long-term care, the county, Monroe, doesn't provide a ton of application assistance for long-term population. We rely on nursing homes, the financial care managers do that, or the community-based organizations that the family is already working with. So I don't see it in Monroe as being a workload relief or a cost relief.
All right. Anything more on this?
Well, you certainly have to add into that a lot of attorneys will do the long-term care applications now. I think if we talk about There might be a good way to look at this in regards to, but I'm not, there really isn't a cost savings or a volume issue, I think. I think everyone who's at least medicated that stage of their life is getting there. And the question maybe for us is, how many people are actually walking in the door and applying for a family member. That's what we want to look at, not a nursing home or a hospital or a somewhere out there. Overwhelming majority are provider-based already.
Joe?
I just want to, I think, and if I can recall our discussion from the summer where we made this recommendation about facilitated enrollment, we didn't really make it to save money. We really made, I'm sorry,
and we
it's not on the list, you know. And I think that we agree, you know, the consumer folks that have talked about this and mentioned this, and Trilby DeYoung isn't with us today, that this was really seen as an equalizer, if you will, between the above 65 and the under 65, the disabled and non-disabled Medicaid populations, partially because a lot of the automation and simplification of eligibility determination and enrollment that's going to happen for the under 65 folks, particularly in the out years of the ACA implementation, will not be extended to the over 65-year-olds. That program is remaining complicated, more complicated, if you will. So this was seen as a way of equalizing the MAGI and the non-MAGI populations, to get very jargon-esque about it. So I do think, you know, the FE program, you know, is important and a really good thing, but I think we all can say it wasn't seen as a cost savings overall. ABS may ultimately save money, even though it's in the budget, but I don't think FE would really save the counties or the state money over the long term. It doesn't seem.
Wendy, and then we're going to move back to the ones that are on the list.
I mean, just to be a little bit more explicit on your point, Joe, my recollection was that we felt because there was a requirement that there be services provided in the community
right.
to the MAGI population,
right.
that we had to make sure for the non-MAGI population.
That's a good point.
That the community outreach piece of it was there, and so that was the vehicle
yeah.
that we chose. And again, not on the cost issue so much, but on the service issue.
I completely agree with that. But I just, as we were looking at creating an ABS, creating a fee, maybe the state doing disability determinations, it started to raise the question to me, so what's left? And
right.
is there further automation that kind of would save some?
Right, the package might add up to something, in other
yeah,
words.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, that's something for Judy maybe to talk
yeah,
to
look at
about
it,
and
see what you think
we're there.
All right, with no further questions on that, let's go back to these three. Are there any comments on these? I think I diverted us by asking about the sisters. So, yes, Martha.
How are you going to score the disability reviews then? If our Cat Tompkins said, even if it's a local district option, if there's really a really different schools of thought here, how are we going to decide where to go?
That when we get to the criteria.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Any comments or questions about this? Did you have any you wanted answered, Judy? The first one.
The question I have about third-party health insurance is the division of work and how does that, you know, we could, and we haven't thought enough about how we would centralize this, except for New York City, where it's a big priority and we're looking seriously at it. But if we were to, someone says they have health insurance, we were to do the work to gather the information and figure out cost effectiveness, and then the reimbursement I get, because they're enrolled, and it's a maintenance job that pertains to the state, but the part of you're doing their eligibility and we're confirming third party, how do we bifurcate that in a way that isn't disruptive? Because it feels like it should live with you. It's so linked to eligibility. And I was just wondering if you had thoughts about that.
Linda?
Well, it's already bifurcated to some degree because, you know, the OMEG hires a vendor that puts a lot of third-party information on eMendi. So that's actually one of the complications from a local district. So I think if the state fully maintained eMendi data, so when a consumer calls up and says it's not correct, research it and take it off, or if it needs to be added, so take the full responsibility for the data eMendi, because right now we take it off, the OMEG puts it back on, you know, it's a confusing and incomplete ownership right now.
So when you the word centralized is really not just about the work, but the accountability for it as well, and making sure that it's one place. Other thoughts on what about the next one? Oh, yeah, Bob?
I'm sorry. I'll be brief.
Okay.
This is
why we're here.
Cost savings for work volume. I just would like to add a part B to this. There was comments on how the state's process to put third-party information had good and bad points to it operationally. I just want to point out that providers can still hard bill to Medicaid. We called it a zero fill report. So we spoke about accountability on this. I would like to see accountability extend to, and I'm not the lawyer here, or subrogation rights perhaps, when a hospital or medical provider hard bills Medicaid to override a charge to a third-party health insurance because Medicaid is easier, perhaps, to deal with, that somehow the state or the county follows up with that health insurance provider to get their money back. Wasn't great, sorry.
Do you understand?
Agreed.
I know enough to follow up.
That's all we need, right? Okay.
So are we saying that the, I think you said, Judy, that since we do eligibility, that we should also be the ones finding out if somebody has a third-party plan?
That's how it works today.
Right.
And you know, New York City has brought this to our attention and by saying, you know, this is a huge, this is a nice candidate for the state to take. And then, so we put it on the list because we've been talking to New York City separately, and other counties said, oh, yeah, we liked it. And I don't remember if yours liked it or not.
Yeah.
But it could go either way. I mean, some counties really like doing this, and they like managing the whole thing, and I'm not sure we would pick those to begin with. Again, I don't think anything will be phased. I just don't think, unless it's something small, on day one that we would end up doing all 58 districts.
Yeah, I would just add in that we, you know, again, I'm just sort of channeling Gene Rockwell here, but I don't know any of this myself. That they have obstacles because of the insurance plans won't talk to the DSS. So it would, if the accountability and accuracy were really, you know, then we'd really be happy if this were taken over.
You know, Judy, I just want to remind us of Carol's point, which is about if things are phased, how they're phased, and who's phased in, that we have to kind of equal the burden so that some counties get a lot of relief and other counties get no relief. It's not going to meet the charge that we have.
Okay, and we probably need to add that as a criteria.
Right, as a criteria is that, you know, if it is phased, well, maybe it's phased differently rather than the same counties for everything in the beginning.
I think on both of these, if the state is, you know, in the long run, they're going to absorb all the functions. These are two very good functions to start with. Third-party health and both disability determination do offer some almost anything to start with.
And,
yeah,
I mean, I think that's what you said, and I agree with that. I don't know if this makes any sense or not, but it would also be interesting to have a county where there's as complete a takeover as possible to see, you know, so in other words.
What's the potential?
Right, what's the potential and does it all kind of work together, you know? So that while you might want to include Erie, you know, first something, as you were saying, but then.
I'll vote for that.
Yeah, right, and that's always great. Start with the West. There may be counties where you're already fairly far along with assuming some stuff and there's just two more pieces. Maybe they should get it all, as it were, up front to see how that looks like. I don't know if that's practicable or even possible, but it's something to look at when you're rolling out.
So we'll want to look at our next meeting, Judy, as much as you can, kind of a, if we're going to really ask the counties to estimate what savings this is going to be, we have to better understand how things might be phased, you know, and because otherwise the number will not number.
True. I think that Joe's comment is good for 2014 and later.
Okay.
I don't think until we have a new eligibility system, all the work in any one county can be taken over.
Okay.
But using what you want the most, what's doable for us. So on your, the ones who gave feedback, spend down was what you wanted the most. And we've already started working on it. So they align nicely. So we can, we'll get some intelligence next time whether we can commit to that to be implemented by 2012 or whether it's because of the systems work needed, which isn't insignificant. We're really talking, we'll do it, it's a priority, it's real relief, but it's 2013 relief versus 2012 relief. So that'll be, I mean, our job is to take your priorities of the group and then add our prioritizing them by doability and when, and then we'll kind of have to work out then a phase-in schedule for that that makes sense. And it may be, I mean, one of the things, before this group was formed, I'll just tell you, to be honest with you, leaving New York City out of the enrollment center for renewals, and they have their own electronic renewal process, and it's kind of like, if it's not broken, don't fix it kind of thing, but they really want some assistance. So that was a sense, just from without of this group, of saying we could give New York City some workload relief while they're not in this other piece. So I think that's a legitimate thing to bring to the whole group, and it may be that we still end up there with New York City, that that's the piece we'll do for them, and maybe there's something for Erie. But, you know, part of the problem, too, is we have two WMSs. So whatever we take up, put in both systems, and we've been focusing on the upstate system. If we focus on the New York City system for something and then three other districts want it, it involves two systems. So we've got to go back and think about that as well. But we can do that. I mean, we can come back with some reality checking.
My feedback on the list was that if we have exactly that problem. If you put spend down aside, it's the list of things that the counties want and the things those lists that go like this. They go like this. Completely different sets of priorities on what's desirable versus achievable. But it sounds like maybe they are.
I think some are
and some don't.
Okay. But they do, they would eventually move on. Let me move on to the next category, which is new application.
Did I just fall asleep? Or what do we do with the enrollment book?
All right.
Do you have a comment about the enrollment book?
No, did we actually stop to say that this is supported around the table?
Yeah, I think we said it's supported, but there are no cost or workload savings.
What if
there's cost avoidance for the counties newly mandated into it. There's no savings for the counties using the enrollment broker today.
Right, yeah.
So those counties...
Right, a list of those counties.
Right. We will have a hard fiscal on that.
Okay.
And we can have the list of the counties that fiscal addresses.
Of the counties in the room, are they who's already got the enrollment broker? Okay, so Erie doesn't.
Little.
Sort of.
Not enough.
We're sort of.
Yeah, sort of.
Okay. All right.
Monroe,
What?
Monroe approached Maximus, I want to say, back in 2006 or 2007, and I don't remember what the cost proposal was. It was like $1 million, but
we have like five people.
So five staff versus $1 million contract, we left it with our staff. So if the state wants us to execute a contract, I hope there's going to be funding with it.
Okay. Judy, now we can move on.
No application. And this... And those will be applications that come from the family planning providers, not the ones that you do as a cascade of eligibility. So someone applies for Medicaid and they're not eligible for anything because they're over income, they get the family planning benefit program because they're eligible for that. That makes no sense. You know, you have those apps, you're doing those. But the ones that come in as freestanding applications from providers, maybe this is something, and we could look at centralizing. So that's one. Number two is coverage for inmates for release. That the idea behind this one is, comes up every once in a while, but the idea behind this one is where the prisons are not, the county the prisons are in are not necessarily the counties where people live. And if you've got a prison population leaving and going to 10 different counties,
it's hard for that county to own their Medicaid application, the county that the prison is in. And the county's far away, so it's come up a few times that maybe this is a population that the state should consider handling in a central way. And that got mixed results. Some counties wrote, no, we don't like that. We do that fine today. Or some counties wrote, we don't have a prison. It's not an issue. So, and then others wrote, yeah, this would help us. So that, and we haven't talked among ourselves in detail about what it would take to do, but we thought we'd put it on the list. The other one we've not sorted out, but it's conduct separate determinations for Medicaid for those ineligible for cash assistance. So you do the cash assistance application. They're not eligible, so they don't get Medicaid, and we need a separate determination. We put that up there. And then someone asked us to add the facilitated enrollment applications, and I think my editorialization is I think that's too big a lift for 12-13 at the state because we have no automated way. You know, we're not going to create a manual application process at the state level. It doesn't make sense. And even DOB didn't give us that much staff that you'd need for that. So I don't think – I mean, it's clearly a kind of first piece of a new application in real volume. Makes sense. I just think we need to build the automation before we can do that. Any comments on these?
I think, Judy, on the second one, while it might not be a major cost savings for counties, I think that's definitely something that we should seriously look at and comment on. Maybe final recommendations, because there's potential for a loss of federal dollars to the state. That's not good for New York. So it does make sense. I know that for the benefit of the task force members here, that one of the inmates in the county jail phase is our Medicaid. We had the law changed a few years ago to suspend Medicaid coverage instead of terminating it, which was the law prior to that. And the suspension allows us a much easier process to re-enroll, and that's very important because we lose federal money. So while not directly benefiting counties, it's one of those issues that makes some good public policy.
I would agree that we don't have a prison. We do this kind of reentry work before people leave the jail. So, you know, it's part of a comprehensive reentry program for us. But statewide, it does seem to make sense. I'm starting to envision a spreadsheet that has 62 counties down this side, all the different initiatives over here, and you check a box as to which one will help which county. And, you know, that'll be a big spreadsheet.
Regarding the coverage for inmates that release that, I'm glad to hear that it sounds like you think it's a county savings, because I think ultimately because of the federal funding, but from a consumer point of view, we know that's a population that has huge health care needs, and they're going to have significant problems and probably be a significant cost, you know, one way or another if they don't have access to care. So the idea of, you know, kind of capturing that population with regard to health care as soon as possible makes sense.
Okay.
Rather than waiting for them to land in whatever county they land in.
Dave, any comments on that third bullet or any of the commissioners?
I'm sorry, back to the inmates. At release, again, it could be done before they're could they be reviewed before their release across the discharge plan.
Good recommendation.
I mean, and bullet number three, if you separate determinations for cash assistance, might be a very good way to start the process of a state takeover, because those are applications that are denied on one part of the agency, manually sent over to another part of the agency, and then many times you have all the information you need to do the eligibility, but there's definitely, I think, some positive there.
Explain a little bit more what that would look like.
Well, I mean, right now, someone comes in and they apply for cash assistance, called TANF. They're determined to be ineligible. But it looks like they'll be eligible for Medicaid because the income levels don't exactly match. That application is denied on the TANF side, packaged, and sent over to a Medicaid team to essentially redo the determination for Medicaid directly. The consumer doesn't have to reapply. as long as that determination is made within a certain amount of time. Similar issue in food stamps. You know, someone applies for food stamps, they don't have health insurance, it looks like they're eligible for Medicaid, can open up a food stamp case, you package the application, goes to Medicaid, they can reopen it in the same way. So it's really, it's...
And the package, we need the package. So I just assumed that when someone came in, they have their information inputted into the WMS system, and that there was a decision that came out saying not eligible for cash assistance.
Right.
And you're, and I just assumed that they said, but eligible for Medicaid. You're saying, no, no, this is just telling me not eligible for cash assistance. And then literally I have to take the paper and everything
yes.
to a different position. And they have enough information in that package. We don't have to go back and ask other things. They have enough information there, but they need to separate. What's the work that happens?
Well, there's a separate determination that's done just to make sure the person is actually Medicaid eligible. That's all. And I re-input some of the information, but the input's not the big part. The big part is to the Medicaid worker, it's a new application, essentially a new application. You're looking at another application. You're determining that it's eligible. You're taking all the steps to issue the benefit, issue the card. And you're right, it's not automated right now. One of the discussions we had about 2014 is the need to automate, because that's part of the federal requirement, is that someone comes in and they apply, looks like they're eligible for food stamps or WIC or something else. There's that automatic process that occurs. That doesn't exist now. Right now it's still you may move it from one desk to another, but you're moving that denial and the paperwork associated with that to someone else's new determination.
Linda.
I would just say New York City, this wouldn't be that helpful because we have a lot of automation in place to automatically transfer the data, and we actually automatically we look to see if they have the basic components because often it's not a complete application. So you do have to defer back to the applicant for more information. So I don't think it would help New York City that much, but I would also wonder in other districts, one thing we find when we've looked at these is that often these applicants have applied for Medicaid through a different office.
Yeah.
And so one thing we do is actually match to see if there's applications pending or another open patient. Surprisingly frequently there is, and that's part of what the automation is helping us with. So I just think the district should want to really think this through and make sure this would fit the, is it separate enough to not create more problems than it solves as you try to have one part-time of the state and another part-time work with it.
The answer I think is yes. I mean, you could have an application come in from, you know, facilitator enroller, person next day applies for cash assistance, next day shows up homeless. I mean, but I think in the end, if we're talking about if the state can do some of those applications, it goes back to Joe's idea that you are now testing at least a full process from start to finish. Here's an application that we're not going to touch anywhere else in the local Department of Social Services. The state is going to handle it directly. The real issue for us is making sure that we use technology to move the information to you. You know, I'm just talking about imaging. I mean, why not just package that image, most of us are IEDR counties, package it right to you. And there is, a lot of them are incomplete. I mean, that's another thing. I'd love to say in a perfect world everything's done, but you're missing some things here.
And the other thing we hear is that those that are incomplete get denied, and then they come back. So the app may have moved to Medicaid, but then they come back to complete their cash, and then they get cash in Medicaid. And then you've got to reconcile that they haven't gotten Medicaid alone on the other side. So I can see some complexity for the ones that aren't kind of the happy path you described, which is they're complete, they're denied, and you can just put
right.
them up on Medicaid.
I'd like to suggest also on the, let's say, on the exit side, if somebody is on assistance and Medicaid and then they get a part-time job, so they lose the assistance, but they still qualify for Medicaid, we'd like to make sure that that happens. On that, in that direction as well. Let me ask a separate question about imaging, something about scanned documents. Are those, you know, typable, workable, or modifiable, or are we talking about a PDF that you, if you want to enter the information into your own database, you have to retype it?
They're not editable documents. Most of them are stored as some kind of picture, so I print for a JPEG.
So I understand a bank statement or something, maybe that's fine, but to the extent that it may be an improvement over what we have now, but to be able to move towards really an application that everybody can access rather than have to retype. because that's not only time taking, but where you also get errors.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
So my concern with this one is that, so it's incomplete applications, who's going to follow up with the, from a consumer perspective, I think the third one is tough. It sounds like to me. Maybe we need more information, but it's a significant volume of them are denied without complete information, which totally makes sense to me. Then handing that off to the state feels like that could feel very disjointed for the consumer and be and create opportunities for them to drop through the cracks.
Well, what, will you look at that when you...
Yeah, no, I think this is one we haven't talked among ourselves about all of these in great detail. The next slide gets a lot of those. We haven't talked about them. They're relatively new.
I just had a question on the inmate one, just to clarify. I'm not sure, because we've talked a couple different things. This idea to help inmates apply for Medicaid, because I think that's the pre-discharge planning and reentry and or process the application.
It's process the application. Someone would still have to do the application.
Someone in the prison would be helping.
Yeah.
Well, we have a caseworker who goes to the jail. So it's not a prison employee. It's a DSS employee.
I would imagine there are a lot of people who are not so much jail, but in prison, who are going to return to a county different from the one in which the prison is located. So.
Let me move on in the interest of time for the next one.
I keep doing this. Do we agree on one?
Did we agree on what?
Number one.
Yeah, I think that's
and we reject
controversial.
My favorite one. No.
For 2012 and 2013, I think we have to reject four.
Okay, moving on then.
Inspiring, active, purposeful, and fulfilled lives is at the core of all that we stand for and do at Episcopal Senior Life Community. Within our three campuses, we offer a comprehensive group of services, including the Episcopal Church Home, the Center for Rehabilitation, River Edge Manor, Grantham Woods, and Seabury Woods. When you join our family, you'll receive admission preference to any of our communities and programs as needs change, assuring peace of mind through the transition of life. Please remain on the line or visit our website at www.episcopalseniorlife.org.
What organization was this? Is here? We'll call them.
I'm thinking it might be
Founded in 1868, the Episcopal Church Home has been meeting the needs of our community with care and compassion for over 140 years. Our hallmark has always been our...
...about what's doable yet, so these are just down here really that came in as comments. No, I called it reconciling electronic matches because there were separate bullets, so if I didn't do justice to it, you know, around missing social security numbers, citizenship, death certificate.
Prison matches. I'd like to give you all of our list. That way, your matching is all.
And then someone calls into consolidation for largely provider issues. It seems to not be less a consumer issue than a provider issue. Provider questions that the districts can't handle, or the districts they're not the right place for them, but they get referred to them, and then they refer them somewhere else. So that seems to make some sense. But I have to talk to our provider call center people on this one. Car replacement, and can you tell me what you all mean by MASSI cash cases? Wendy may know, but you all wrote it just like that.
Anyone?
Yeah, sure, I could do it. I mean, at this point, the SSI determinations are at the state level, and then, you know, it gets matched back to the county, and then the county opens up a separate Medicaid case for that SSI enrollee. And so, and then we're just really in a case management role, just, you know, keeping track of where they live and issuing cards, and, you know, our contact with them is pretty rare, or depending
by
on...
By family care and spiritual support. To learn more about the Episcopal Church Home or any of our communities, ask for more information when you return to the line or visit our website at www.episcopalseniorlife.org.
They are great. From a pure workload perspective here, it's kind of on the lighter side because you can have one person do five.
The Center for Rehabilitation provides an engaging atmosphere where you can transition from hospital to home. Expert physical, occupational, and speech therapists are available to assist you with your recovery. Your individualized team will meet with you to plan your personal path to wellness. Private suites are equipped with cable television, DVD player, private telephone, and wireless internet access with laptops upon request. Ask for more information about the Center for Rehabilitation when we return to the line, or visit our website at www.episcopalseniorlife.org.
You're an important caller. Please continue holding. Someone will be right with you.
River Edge Manor is a welcoming, independent community with all the services and amenities you need for years of comfortable, enjoyable, and safe living. Located in Rochester's Preservation District, River Edge Manor offers an array of cultural and social activities perfect for the independent senior. Our 49 spacious apartments include a 24-hour emergency response system, housekeeping services, dinner in our restaurant-style dining room, and transportation to medical appointments. The family atmosphere of River Edge Manor also makes for the companionship and personal attention expected in senior housing. Its location next door to the Episcopal Church home allows for easy access to short-term rehabilitation or longer-term skilled nursing services. We welcome your questions about River Edge Manor when we return, or feel free to visit our website at www.episcopalseniorlife.org. Brentwood Woods in Henrietta is the perfect solution for independent seniors who need supportive services. Licensed by the state.
The leader has disconnected. The conference will now end.